Hi, I'm Kylie.
And I'm Elliot.
We're hosts of Bad Dad, Rad Dad, a Snack Labs podcast where we look for better dads one movie at a time. Every week, we talk about the movies we watched, the thoughts and feelings they brought up in us, and the best and worst dads we found in them.
Our weekly movie picks can span decades, genres, languages, and more. Plus, we keep it totally spoiler-free so you can discover movies that you want to watch.
So join us every Thursday on our silly little movie journey to hear about the movies we watched that week.
And the dads they made us wish we had. Because
my dad's dead.
And my dad's a deadbeat.
But as far as we're concerned,
not all dads have to be bad.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready for another week of podcasting where we talk about sexuality and sex and relationships and sex toys and our personal mental health and all the things that have that this podcast has evolved into over the years.
Is this podcast just Bridie and Jeremy podcast?
Pretty much. And then we're graced with the presence of some really smart people sometimes. Actually, yeah, all the time. Week. We always have very all smart guests. All of our guests are very smart. And I guess we're graced by all the smart people who listen to us. Because if you're listening to this podcast, you're smart. Just by listening to this show, you are smart.
I agree. Probably smarter than the average bear.
And smarter still if you're a patron and you're watching this.
Those are some high IQ folks out there who are our patrons. Although you don't have to have a high IQ to be smart, do you?
You need a high IQ to do this. And if you want to see what that was, you'll have to go to patreon.com/turnmeon. Become a patron and you can watch our foreplay segments.
You don't want to miss those. How do you feel about the word foreplay these days, by the way?
Foreplay? How do I feel about the word foreplay?
Yeah, or the, well, I mean, not the word. What do you think about, so a lot of the messaging I've been seeing in my echo chamber is about...
Is foreplay canceled?
Foreplay being like canceled because because it's not, it's considered optional. Wait, actually, when it's foreplay.
Well, oh, like, okay. Yeah. Like, so the word foreplay constitutes like a, it's not as important.
It's a
secondary thought, right?
It's before penetration. It's before the main event.
Right.
You know?
Is for.
But it is actually the, it is play.
Is the word for an actual preface?
Yeah. F-O-R-E.
Is that a preface? Is it a preface for other words? Like, where else do we see foreplay? Or the word, sorry, for
in other words? Preface, examples, foreground.
Foreground. Yes, yes. Yeah. Nice. Anything else?
My quick Google search didn't bring up enough of that, anything. So for, I want to say a for, forehead.
Forehead, sure. Yeah.
It is.
It's
the front of your head. I said foreground.
Can you look up the definition of
four?
Yeah. Like, is that a possibility? The definition of four?
Yeah. So four is its own word as well. So it just means in, toward, or near the front.
Okay.
So it isn't used, it says it's obsolete at an earlier time or period. Oh, yes. So that's an obsolete definition. At an earlier time or period. Isn't that like four square and 10 years ago or something like that? Oh, I'm going to just force.
You've lost me.
I know.
So okay.
Four
so
square.
Yes. I remember the game Four Square when I was in elementary school. So foreplay, give me more here than you've heard people being not okay with the term foreplay. Similar to the way that our friend Nicole is like, fuck the word virginity, let's go with sexual debut, which I'm all for.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. And also that movement's been around for a while.
Sure.
But yeah, foreplay is not like let's get rid of it, but kind of. Yeah. I think I'm so kind of seeing that.
What do we call foreplay now?
Sex. Oh, sexy time.
Right. Yeah. Just yeah. It's all.
It's
sex.
It's just all. It's all sex. Yeah.
I'm cool with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because it is all sex to me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not like I've never really been one to think like. Got to start with the foreplay, or where's the foreplay, or like what. It's just like we're kissing now and this is going to turn into something more than kissing, and that is great, and that's all I want.
I wonder what like what the actual history of the word foreplay is, like when it came into play, because I kind of feel like it's one of those situations where like husbands in like the 40s were like, I don't know what's wrong, but I stick my penis in the vagina and she says that she doesn't like it. And like people being like, well, here's the weird thing about people with vulvas.
I wonder if it was who was that couple, Masters and Johnson? I bet you they had something to do with it.
Probably.
You know what
right.
We should do? We should prep for next episode so that we know this stuff. Like smart people.
Well, I didn't know we were going to talk about this.
Neither did I. I had no idea we were going down this road.
Tune in next week.
Yeah, tune in next week.
For this exact conversation, but with facts.
But you know what, folks? We actually do have a really fun conversation lined up for you later in the show. We spoke to our new friend from all the way down in Florida, the most northern tip of Florida, Dr. J, who I don't want to give too much away before we get into it because it's quite the conversation. Dr. J, we'll say I'll say this much right now. What Dr. J does is she is writing some very horny literature, and very excited to get my hands on some of her books, some of her workings. But had a very, very fun conversation with Dr. J, and we're excited to throw to that momentarily here. But before we do, Bride, you were saying before we started the show here that you had a little like survey thing you wanted to run through with us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited. I like surveys. I like tests.
It's actually an inventory. We're taking an inventory.
Mm.
What do you think that means?
kind of taking stock of what you inventory technically is how much of product exists within. I'm a fucking idiot. I don't know. Don't ask me this shit.
That's
inventory in terms of the odd jobs I had as a kid.
Coming to you next week. More information on
the history of inventory. But yeah, taking inventory, like your own personal inventory, like sort of taking, checking in with your thoughts and feelings on certain things. I don't know. What do you mean? What do you mean? What is inventory? Fuck.
How dare you ask me that?
I need nicotine.
I'm going to say that this use of the word inventory, I think is directly related to whatever the actual word that Esther Perel wanted to use in a different language. And this was like sort of the closest thing up with in English.
Yeah. So is this an Esther Perel thing?
Yeah.
God love her.
So this guy, yeah, I know. And I just love the way that she uses the English language.
She was hanging out with my buddy, Justin Baldoni, the other day.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. I wanted to text Justin and be like, hey, can you ask her if she'll come on my show?
Please.
I think Justin would have been don't use my number for this. Don't use my number for that.
Yeah.
anyway, continue.
Yeah. One day we'll get there. Keep plugging away. Yeah. Okay. So this inventory, she says, is designed to get you to start asking questions to examine and explore yourself, your behaviors, your motives, and your history. I think this is I popped over to her Instagram and you can like hit her link tree or whatever. And it's a really interactive, I've never seen this in a link tree before, but it's like, it's a whole other program that's like a swiping situation. Anywho. So you can download these lists of questions there if you want to. And the inventory, 10 questions you should be asking yourself about your sex life.
Ooh.
She suggests you take one or two of these questions per week. So they require some thought. All right.
Great. We don't have time for that. So we're going to just plow right through it with no thought.
Okay. I'm going to actually skip to question 3
because that's my favorite number.
Okay, great. What do you like to experience in sex? So here, what she's listed.
Choice? Okay.
She's listed a bunch of words and I can read them to you. Right. Or I can just tell you that they're adjectives describing words and you could, you know, maybe have some of those in your mind already before I start reading these other people's answers. So Gwen, the question, what do you like to experience in sex? So I'll let you sit with that for a second and then I'm going to give you some examples. Okay. Some options here include tenderness, softness, closeness, intensity, aggression, transcendence, spiritual connection, rebelliousness, a release, surrender, dominance, abandon, unboundedness, freedom from responsibility, ruthlessness, timelessness, giving, receiving, being taken.
I feel like we're playing the thesaurus game.
I know, sort of. So those are some options. Any of those jump out to you, or do you have any of your own that swim to the forefront?
Can you read it again?
Of your brain?
There were a couple there that stuck out to me.
Tenderness, softness, closeness, intensity.
Intensity. Aggression.
Transcendence.
Yeah, connection. Transcendence. That was the one. Intensity, transcendence, dominance, and wow, this is fun. This is very interesting. There's one more word I'm looking for, but it's kind of in the realm of transcendence.
Like surreal?
No. What is the this is now becoming like not so fun to listen to is like us thinking.
Well, hopefully our listeners are, you know, thinking about this question for themselves, or perhaps speaking to someone else in the room, maybe even pressing pause.
This actually came up in a game of the Thesaurus game not too long ago. I want to say it was Phantasm. Phantasmic. What is phantasm? Delusive appearance, illusion, ghost, specter, a figment of the imagination, a product of fantasy, such as a mental representation of a real object. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm poking a little bit too deep. I think those three words work really well. Dominance, transcendence, and what was the other one that I said?
intensity.
Yeah, those like that, and also a little dash of closeness
in there. Just a dash.
Yeah, just a dash of closeness.
That's nice.
I mean, you know, I like all sex. I like sex when it's like just waking up groggy, like having sex because, you know, waking out of a sex dream. Sex, I like we're about to go to bed. We haven't had sex today. Let's make sure we have sex today. Sex, but I like all sex, but I really love the sex that's like, you know, that sort of when you're done, you're like, whoa, that was
the workout.
That was something else. Yeah. That's fun.
Cool. Good answers.
Are we going to go into another one?
I guess so. Unless I'm supposed to answer.
You answer.
I'm going to just keep it real short and say, yeah, transcendence.
Transcendence is a good one because that encompasses a lot, I think.
Yeah, it's like a feeling of not leaving your body, but like maybe just like dissolving and becoming one with everything.
It equates like true presence. In the, you know, getting so lost in the
consciousness.
Act that you are, consciousness. Fuck, that's a good one there.
Transcendence.
Flow state, that'd be another like flow, I think it would be good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's so great when that happens during sex. I feel like abandon is a nice word. So abandoned to just like no restraint or like censorship.
Yes. Reckless abandoned.
And there was another one. Oh, like maybe I want to say like, I like the word a release there. I think like I want to feel like I have
Exercised a demon
is basically what I was going to say.
Yeah. Exorcism was one of the first words that came to mind, but yeah.
All right. Yeah, sure. Okay. Let's jump into another question. Among the five senses, which is the most sexual for you? I think we've asked this before. Seeing, hearing, smelling, touching, tasting.
Seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like the lights on. I don't like my eyes closed. I like to watch. I like to see. Mm-hmm. Especially, you know what? That has become especially true now that I, with the new place that I'm living in, with the like wall to wall, floor to ceiling mirror. that is the closet.
Yeah.
Like it's the whole half of my bedroom is one giant mirror. And that's like, that's fun. That's great.
Mm.
See, I'd say seeing is the big one for me.
I think I'm going to say touching. I have been, I'm sure there are like, I just assume that having a partner who like just generously wants to like give you massages for every day for long periods of time, like doesn't really exist is like more of a fantasy, but sometimes I fantasize about just like someone just grabbing hold of my feet and giving me the best foot massage ever. Yeah. Cause it's going to lead to sex. It's going to.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm going to say touching.
I played that card the other night. Mm. Oh, actually it was, I had that Promescent, massage gel or massage oil.
Oh yeah.
In the closet, and I was like, can I use this on you? And he was like, yeah, of course. And I was like, I know where this is going to go.
Okay, here's another fun one.
All right.
Of the following verbs, which are you most comfortable with and which would you like to stretch? Okay. To ask, to take, to give, to receive, to refuse.
Say them again. Which are you most comfortable with and which are do you want
to... Would you like to stretch?
What does that fucking mean? Does that mean like which do you want to be better at or to be more...
Yeah.
Right. More inclined to try and be open to?
And this is in the context of your sex life.
Okay. Say it again.
To ask, to take... To give, to receive, to refuse.
To ask, to take, to give, to receive, to refuse. And what am I most comfortable with? And what do I want to stretch the most?
Yeah.
I'm probably most comfortable with to give.
Mm.
And I could probably stretch to ask.
Mm.
I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm to give as well. And then the one I'd like to stretch, I kind of think it might be to take.
Because
I feel like I get that feedback in my partnerships through... My life is like, I want you to just like, you know, be more aggressive in like how you pursue.
That's like, what you want?
Sex. No, I feel like that's what my partners have expressed.
Oh, expressed to you.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right.
Rather than like, as opposed to ask right. like, hey, would you go down on me? It's like, it's more of a like to take would be to like. I'm going to suck your dick right now.
Mm,
do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's like an aggression, but it's almost like a forward crossing of a bridge. Like that's, you know, really quick. However, I will say that anytime I've tried to take in my sort of like most natural instinctual way, it usually gets met with like, why are you being such a goof?
Right, right.
You're kind of weird.
I mean, to take was like, was toe-to-toe with to give, but I didn't want to say to take because I didn't want to make it sound like I'm selfish. Because I really don't think I am. I don't think I'm a selfish lover at all. But I was like, if you say to take, I think it's going to be taken the wrong way. But I have no, like, more often than not, I have no problem just being like, being like what you say you want to be more of, which is like, you know, assertive and aggressive in the initiation of sex. But, you know, I'll say this that I've noticed is that I have a gas tank. I have a limit of that. And so if I'm doing that too much, I start to get in my head and I start to feel like, I start to feel like there's like an imbalance and then I get self-conscious about taking or giving. Yeah. So I think that's where the ask, that's where the stretching, the ask comes in. Because when I'm in that state of self-consciousness about like, oh, I've been initiating too much, or I don't feel like I've been receiving, or I don't feel like I've been being taken from, I then find it hard to ask for what I need. Like I start to like kind of go into a bit of a hole. It's like a weird fucked up spiral.
Interesting.
So ask is like, I think ask. And then when I come out of it, I'm like, you could have just fucking asked. Like, why are you in your head about all this shit? So that's where the ask comes in. Cause I'm good at taking, good at like, and like pushing forward and doing it and making it happen. But then if I get too caught up in my own mental bullshit, then I have a hard time asking for what I need.
Man, it's so hard too. And like a chunk of time goes by and you're like, I've been thinking about this for a while now. And asking just feels so loaded.
Yeah.
You're like, asking now comes with like all of the stories that I made up over the last week while I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's a good question. I like that question. That was good food for thought. Do you have another one?
The other ones, I feel like,
what's the purpose of this? This is like, I guess just to take, like you had said earlier, just taking inventory of your sex life. Just like food for thought, just to think about the things that maybe you should consider more or put work into, or like, is that the purpose of this?
Well, this is what she says in the, like, why is this important? She says, we all come to relationships with an emotional dowry that contains fear, basically baggage, your fears, your anticipations.
What is that word, dowry? I do love that word.
Dowry is what I believe traditionally it's used as, like, literally when you married me, what my family provided to you and your family, like, to marry me.
That's a dowry?
Yeah. It's a gift.
I still don't know what that is. Oh, wait, you were the gift?
No. It's like property or money or livestock that my family would give to you.
Yes. Well, your dad did give us those goats. So I'm glad for that. That was nice. He did give us that dowry.
A goat dowry?
Dowry.
So basically, yes, it's food for thought. It's, hey, cause here, I'll give you some examples of the other questions on here.
Okay.
So what are the dominant messages you grew up with about boys and girls / men and women / whatever, about boys? Yeah. What are the dominant messages you grew up with about your gender. Essentially.
Mm-hmm.
How comfortable are you in communicating your sexual wants and dislikes? How about your emotional wants and dislikes? I mean, we address that on the show all the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What was the attitude towards sex in your family growing up? Which is a really hard one, I think, to like
pin down.
Really. Yeah, pin down, I mean, and like weed
for,
out.
For some people, maybe. For some people, I know I've heard of some people, it's very easy to.
Yeah, that's fair.
That out.
Do you want sexual exclusiveness in your relationships? That's on her list of questions.
Mm.
What is a hard conversation for you to have around intimacy and sexuality? How do you feel? Mm. What happens to your body? What is the story there? So, yeah, it's kind of just like.
Bunch of stuff, yeah.
It's a good, it's food for thought.
Cool.
And a good indication of like, oh, maybe that's where I could do a little bit of work, change my narrative, so on.
Well, speaking of narrative, we are going to get into quite the narrative here with our friend Dr. J. Quite a storied life surrounding the world of sex and sexuality. And it all started not unlike my beginnings in life with sex and sexuality. It all started at a sex store. But a little bit of a different path she took than me. So we hope you enjoy this conversation with our guest, Dr. J. We fucking love this episode, and very much look forward to having her back on the show sometime in the future. And if you like what you hear, well, Turn Me On Podcast. We're, you know, it's just the two of us doing this now, and we love your support. So continue to listen to wherever you find podcasts. And if you're listening on Apple Podcast, leave a rating and a review. And if you're on Spotify, make sure you hit that follow button, because we love you, and we're so glad that you're all listening. And with that little plug, let's not waste any more time. So without further ado, here's Dr. J. Track there. All right, well, we are rocking and rolling.
Alrighty.
Talking with Dr. J all the way from the most northern tip of Florida. Dr. J, can you just remind me what was the town called?
Well, the actual town is Fernandina Beach. The island is Amelia Island.
Fernandina Beach sounds like a destination that I would like to go to in the middle of the summer.
It sounds like a destination where you would want to hole up and write books on an island like that.
My writer friends call it Smuttylicious Island. They get a lot done here.
That might be the title of our episode.
Smuttylicious Island. I think that's a good segue into introducing who we are talking to today.
Yeah.
Go for it, Bride.
All right. So welcome everybody, to Dr. J. Dr. J is, a name that was very intriguingly bookmarked under my Turn Me On bookmarks from some point within this quarantine period of things to follow up on that might be interesting for the show. And so while not remembering the context for which what caught my eye originally, I contacted Dr. J to see if she would be willing to be a guest on the show. And her signature at the end of her email is retired sex therapist turned erotica writer.
That's right up our alley. Hell yeah.
It's right up my alley too.
So Dr. J, we had a chance to connect before we started recording, and you were telling me a little bit about the beginning of your journey into sex therapy and erotica, and I would love for our listeners to hear that origin story as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you, Brady. Thank you, Jeremy, for having me on. I have to tell you, you know, I think most people wake up one day and say, what will I be when I grow up? And they never say sex anything. And that's our culture has brought us into that direction. And I think in a lot of ways, it comes down to choice. When things cross your path, do you use your strength and say, this is what I'm going to do? Well, my choice started the day that I did three semesters of college and said, I have no idea what I want to get my degree in. I quit school and watched my parents totally freak out. And I got a very interesting job to pay the bills and working for Adam and Eve. They were located at that time in Carrboro, North Carolina. I did any number of things, including packing condoms and, you know, running phones and finding out what is it that people want in the privacy of their home. And the coolest part was I was working for a man who did his master's in public health and studied this and decided to do a retail business from this. So that part was really cool. And I think about my life's kind of divided up into four segments. And that first one is, you know, how did my family deal with the fact that I did this? So we always had a rule at home that you always sat at the dinner table and talked about your day. And I thought, okay, I've got the segue of time that I'm going to be with them before I move into this apartment. And they want to ask me about my day. And I thought, I don't know how I'm going to do this. So are they going to honor what we've done all along and let me discuss sexuality at the dinner table? So I watched them take a deep breath. They went to one brother, they went to the other brother, and they came to me. And I took a deep breath and I said, well, today we blew up condoms and hung them on the Christmas tree. And that kind of broke the, you know, okay, well, maybe we can do this. And from then on, they've probably been the best proponents of permission to be who you are and work sexuality in a different way than maybe you grew up with it. So that's kind of, that was the jumping off point for then going back to school 3 different degrees later and many jobs in between from, well, I have to say I started with a physician from the Netherlands, and I know you talked about some shows from the Netherlands, and he was one of these people that you couldn't stop him. He would send me all over the country and train with all of these people, and I was doing things in this little Bible Belt, North Carolina, that people would never have believed that I was doing. Mm. So it made life really interesting.
No doubt. I'm for folks who've been living under a friggin' rock, Adam and Eve, can you explain what Adam and Eve is? Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a retail store. You can find them online. You can buy any number of sex products, sex toys, clothing. They have specialists. Now, one of the things that I really appreciated about what Phil Harvey did as a business owner in the front end of his work, he hired certified sex therapists to take a look at all of the products that they had. And they put a stamp of approval to say, this isn't harmful. These are good things in a sex positive direction for people to use. And now he has an in-house sex therapist that does work for them, resources and that sort of thing. So they're a resource, a sex positive resource that people can use.
Amazing. Now, I'm curious to know how did you line up that job? Did you know what you were in for from the get-go, or did you just kind of like stumble into picking up the work at Adam and Eve?
I stumbled into it. My mom worked for the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and I was just reading ads, where can I get a job? And it didn't say Adam and Eve, it said Population Planning Associates. And I was like, okay, she saw that and she said nothing. And she knew the whole time where I was going to try out for this job. And it was a typing job. I mean, it was like, and I got there and I went, what have I done? This is totally different. It was eye-opening as a 19-year-old going, this is fascinating.
Were they? Sorry, Brad, go ahead.
Well, I'm just wondering, like, had Adam and Eve been around for a while? And
To remember, I'm old. I mean, we're dealing with, that was back in 76 when I had that first job. Whoa. And they had probably been, they had a retail store down on near Franklin Street, probably 2 years before that. Okay. But they've done the online business for a long time since then.
I got to say that population planning is one of the most, the smartest covert business names.
Yeah, totally.
Because, you know, a lot of our listeners wouldn't know this, but if you try to register a business that has anything to do with sex, it's really, really tricky to, like, first of all, get approved, but also to pick a name that describes what you do without being profane.
Yes. So, yeah, I can relate to that. My publishing business is Passion Works Press.
Do you? Okay. Sorry. I feel like I interrupted you somewhere. Oh, I'm writing that down. Passion Works Press.
Were you saying that to me, Brad?
Yeah. Did I cut you off?
Yeah, I had a thought, but I don't. Oh, right. My question was, what kind of, you know, speaking of you as a 19-year-old walking into this job, how did you relate to sexuality as a 19-year-old? Like, what was your, was this like kind of a sort of risque thing that you felt like you were doing something that you shouldn't be doing, or were you pretty like, you know, sexually I guess aware of yourself and Like, what was your upbringing surrounding sexuality?
Well, my upbringing was a Canadian father who was Catholic, who ended up with a woman who was from the Deep South. And they, in fact, got married twice because they got married in Reno, Nevada. And then she did 6 months of catechism and they got married a second time. So I grew up on a tobacco farm and I had cows and pigs. And it was always the, you know, I know what that looks like and I know what that has to do with. And it was the, well, the cow falls in love with the other cow and this is how this happens. My headset for what have I walked into was a brand new world, but at the same time the family was not pulling me back going, you shouldn't do that. We were really raised to be free thinkers, read everything we could possibly read. My aunt was a writer and, you know, she spent a lot of time in feminist work, so it wasn't an area that I was unfamiliar with. It was an area that I didn't have anything to do with. And I go into this job as someone who's never had a sexual debut before.
So this was,
you know, a whole different world that I step into this and know nothing about what it has to do with.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I love that, that story of telling the family around the table what you did in your day. I can just imagine like sweaty palms and like visions of condoms and vibrator swimming in your head.
And you know, it's interesting because when I got a master's degree, I have a PhD in marriage and family therapy, and my specialty is sex therapy, and it's been sex therapy the whole time I've done therapy. But when I taught classes in human development or child development, and I'd be working the sexuality piece into it, my family was like, oh, great. What's she gonna have to say about this? Oh, great. It's like now they're tired of all of the things that I bring into it. It's like, okay, just open the space. What's she gonna share with us today? And now it's, what book did you write today? Let's talk about how this works. So they're pretty wide open about that. And I do find out they tell people. I have to share this story with you because this is what it's like to parent when you do what I do. I was doing a female sexuality course in my office and I was late and I had to stop by my house to pick up my giant box of sex toys that I was going to be showing in this program. And my middle schooler had just gotten home from school, my only child, he's a male, and I was late and I had dumped all the toys on the kitchen table and I'm trying to put batteries in them. And he walked in and went, what you doing? And I said, I'm kind of late and I'm trying to get these batteries in. He says, well, I'll give you a hand. And I went, okay. And he starts picking up batteries and he says, well, how do I know if it works? And I said, well, turn the button on. And so he's picked up a rabbit where the head's twirling around and he's punching other buttons and it vibrates. And he goes, Mom, you've got an interesting job.
That's a good reaction.
Yeah. How old is he now?
He is 29.
And what did he end up doing for work in his life?
He is a HR person. In fact, he works for a company that we all know and love in Austin, Texas right now.
Okay. All right. I love the layered sort of background, and sort of the journey that you've been on to get to where you are today. Before we get into the writing, because I'm very, very interested in that, I want to know more about your work as a sex therapist and relationship therapist. Okay. Like, did you have a specific sort of specialty that you sort of focused your studies on or your practice in? Is it pretty like broad strokes, like, you know, sexual therapist and all that encapsulates?
Yeah. Well, I think you have to remember too, where I was located when I started was in North Carolina. There were few sexuality experts, so you could have the full palette of what people might come in and want information about. And you might end up sending them to a bigger city where there was more, people, information, resources, that sort of thing. But, you know, I did my PhD in Tallahassee, Florida. That's the capital city. But if you take a look at the state, you divide it in half, everybody in South Florida is going to get paid a lot more money for what they did than I did in the north end of the state. You know, you're just dealing with the economics of where things are. If you're the only person in town doing this work, then you're going to find a whole range of things. So it isn't like I said, this is my area. It's kind of like sexuality is my umbrella. Mm. And I do it related to an education component. I always ran male sexuality and female sexuality groups at my private practice. I would go out into the community and I would go to childcare centers. And I would work with the providers from birth to age five. These are language. You know, we understand that kids don't speak the words until 9 months, but they have receptive language. Let's practice getting the accurate terms in here so we can be body positive and they won't know any difference. And you can, you know, practice for 9 months getting comfortable and using these words. So it just depended on who contacted me, what they wanted. Was there any specific research I needed to do or people I needed to contact to do everything? But it was kind of across the board, a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm.
How would a session begin with a new patient? Would I walk into a session with you and like tell you my whole life story of or just my sex life story or like what I'm dealing with right now? Or like, how do people generally cross that bridge first?
Yeah. Well, I think that's going to depend on what your therapy training was specifically. I did a lot of work with Dr. David Snarch. I met him early on in my journey. He created the Crucible model of sex therapy, and he just died during COVID. It was a heart attack, It's been a heartbreaker in this direction. He was a pioneer in what he did, and his work was about working with your concerns in present time. It wasn't about, let me find out everything that went on for you in the past. What's the issue, concern that you're having right now? And let's see what's going on here right now. And what are the things that might be getting in your way in solving that? And I found that to be helpful because it's not good for people to bring up all their past history that has negative stuff to it. You don't need to anchor that back into them. How can we help them find the strength right this minute to move forward? So to be specific, Brady, I'd say, so tell me what brought you in today? I mean, I don't have to have tons of information. I'm going to look at how you reply to me, where you are comfortable, where you're not comfortable. And then I know when to move in and ask another question or back off and go at it from a different direction. But it's all about helping the person find strength to get to the place they want to go. And, you know, my philosophy about sexuality has really been to help people integrate sexuality into who they are. And I can tell you that my experience has been when people actually take sexuality itself and explore that component in them, they become fuller humans. They become glowing. They have a positive and really good sensation about who they are. But do we allow that to happen? I mean, we have to create the space. And that's what I feel like I've done for my entire career, is to create the space so people can be vulnerable with themselves. They can choose to share that with another person. They can practice that one-on-one with me, with a, you know, someone else in the room. But you know, the sex is a people growing machine. And when you can work the process of you in sexuality, most of the time we hear couples come in and they say, I want to talk about that person's problem. And I go, well, you know, that person can talk about their own problem. I'd like to hear how you are working with yourself on this particular problem. Sometimes it's redirection and getting people focused on themselves for how they do things, which is the only thing they have any control over.
I love that. That what you said about it being integrated into who they are. I was wondering, in your do you think there's any like examples? I guess they'd be public figures of people who seem to conduct themselves with a fair amount of integratedness of their sexuality and who they are.
Wow!
I just want to see it. You know, I just
That's a great question, because especially with the pandemic, it's like I've closed down to, I don't watch things on TV. At this point, trying to even think who that would be. Mm-hmm. I would think it would be people that are in the sexuality world. I think about people that I work with. I think Justin Lay Miller would be one of those people who comes across in that way. David Lay is another person that I think would come across in that way. And, you know, those are the sexuality people. It's harder to identify what you're talking about, because as a therapist, I don't want to be talking about other people out of school. Although they might be a wonderful example, I don't know anything about underneath. I don't know what they're dealing with. And that's a part in trying to be genuine and authentic, is figuring out how to walk a mile in somebody else's shoes and appreciate that what's going on for them may not be what's going on for me. And I don't want to put that on somebody else too. So that's a really hard question for me to answer directly for you.
Well, you answered it really well, because I think what that leaves me with is, it's not something that you can see out there and then emulate that. It is really more about how it feels, and that there, you know, when I think about Justin Laymiller, and I don't know the other references that you made, but when I think about Justin, I think about there's no switching gears to talk about sex and sexuality. It's just very fluid in the conversation, an ease and a comfort with which that talking about that comes through.
And you know, I think that people who work in sexuality, who've been trained in, you know, for like sexual attitude reassessments, you've done certification, you've worked your personal self, so you know where your biases are and you don't step into them. It's interesting that it's the same way in sexuality writing. You're dealing with not putting biases in, and you want to present the characters that you're presenting in a particular way and be consistent in doing that. And when you can be fluid in that way, you really provide permission for people to see what it feels like to be in your space. And as a sex educator, I use the PLICIT model. P stands for permission. Have I done everything? Have I set a tone? Have I given you space so that you can breathe and move the way you want to? And then the LI is limited information. What are the myths and misinformation you might have been given, and how can I help you replace those with facts and specific things that you need to know? I just did an article last week on the clitoral body, and it's amazing how much people don't know, just thinking the clitoris is the tip of the iceberg here for the vulva. And you start looking at the legs of the clitoris and where it backs up against the vulva, and, you know, why certain sensations like sitting on a motorcycle, you know, would feel good across the entire crotch area, because you have deeper nerve endings that are working there. So this is me giving specific, you know, limited information. And then the specific suggestion, which is the SS implicit, is you need to go read this book. It's going to tell you more. You need to go visit this person. They're going to provide that. If you use this particular sex toy, it's going to do this, this, and this. Mm. So that's what I do, whether it's education or therapy oriented: the space, the feel, the information, and then the specifics.
Mm. Okay.
Turn Me On Podcast. We'll be back after this short break.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com.
That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I would love to hear about the transition of being a therapist going into becoming a writer of fiction. Or have you? I think writing a book, not something I've ever done, not something I ever really want to try to do.
I know that feeling.
It sounds daunting, to put it lightly.
It is daunting.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, Jeremy. I grew up with two writers in my family, and it's always the, nope, I'm not doing what you do. I don't want to be compared to you. I don't want to have anything in that direction. So I finished my private practice work. We had some family changes that were happening, and I closed my practice. And then a friend came in and said, I really would love for you to step back into the classroom. I taught everything in college except human sexuality. I mean, I trained therapists. I'd done this, but I had never taught the actual human sexuality class. And he said, would you please come back and do this? So for 4.5 years, that's all I did was teach. Every other day I'm in the classroom. And chapter 5 in the book was all about fantasies. And there's the science, the scientific research part. And I would have the students write an anonymous fantasy. And the only thing they could put was a symbol on the top. They couldn't have their name on it. I even gave out the same paper. Here's the same paper. I want you to do it like this. Then we switched papers around and we would read them and we would talk about, you know, who do you think had this fantasy or whatever. Then we'd look at the science and we'd, you know, grab the numbers up and we'd do like a little science experiment in there. So when I told them that I was retiring, that I was moving to the Highland, they said, you cannot stop sex education. You do it like nobody else. You have to find a different way. And I thought, what does that mean? And they said, you know, chapter 5, you tell some pretty good stories. Maybe you need to think about writing. And I was like, no. That's not what I want to do. And so when I came to the island, I thought about it. I thought, do I have a story that I want to tell? I had an idea for a book. And the more I thought about it, it's like I have zero writing background. I did academic writing, but that is not fiction writing. I don't know anything about it. So in November of 2015, I signed up for a How to Write Erotica class with Rachel Kramer Bussell, the editor of all editors. She's probably edited more anthologies in erotica than anybody. And she's with Cleus Press. And she happened to be doing a book reading 2 hours from me, and I'd already started the class, so I surprised her. I drove 2 hours and said, hey, I'm Dr. J. And she was like, you drove up here to see me? And I said, yes. And I have to tell you, this is even funnier because she gave me a book for coming, and I just signed a contract this week to be in the next volume of that series or that book. So that was just really cool.
Amazing.
But Jeremy, it is not easy. It's like I made a transition for a whole new life. All I have done is take classes in how to write. Every story has a beginning, a middle, and an end. You have to have conflict. You have to have tension. Mm-hmm. How are you going to do the sexual journey in this process? And everybody says, you'll have an easy time because you did all that therapy. And I look at them and go, wait a minute. I'm not bringing therapy concerns and issues from my past clients into this. This is imagination. This is, how can I create new people and tell stories that might go on for them that are fictionally realistic, but factually accurate? And I have a piece in me that I think, you know, to teach, you have to be creative. You have to think about ways that you're going to deliver the information. And I just kind of channel some of that direction in there. And the first story that I published was in Best Women's Erotica, Volume 3, and it was called Infused Leather. And this story came to me in the middle of the Atlanta airport. I was walking down the concourse and I look to the right and I see coffee, and I look to the left and I see Shoeshine, and I kept looking back and forth, and it was just like, boom, the whole story came together in full component. And I wrote this story almost in a sexual redemption kind of direction, because it was about leather. It was about he was into belt leather. She was into shoestring leather. And it was about the past. Somebody had used a belt on him. Somebody had tied her with shoelaces. They wanted to own this in a sexual way that changed their past. Hmm. They were doing it in the present. And in that moment, I realized that I was doing in writing what I did in therapy. This is in present time. I'm writing a story that has to do with this, and here are all the sexual components.
Right.
It was like, this is pretty wild.
I heard you in that saying that, you know, people telling you that, oh, this will come easy to you with all the background that you have, all the stories that you've heard. And that was one of the things that I had first thought of was like, oh, Dr. J, like, she's heard it all. Like there's a whole ocean of experience that you've had that you could draw from. And what I'm gathering is that actually isn't your process. That isn't what you draw mm-hmm. from at all. But do you think subconsciously, like deep down, there are, you know, that there are some, I don't know, people you've met or it's kind of like that thing about, you know, when I don't know if this is fucking real or not, but like the idea of like people in your dreams, like you never really make up a completely new person. Like the people in your dreams mm-hmm. are always figments of other people. Yeah. An amalgamation of other people that you've met. Yeah. Like, do you think your imagination works in that sort of way at all, where you're.
Well, I know it does. I mean, The part where Bridie was talking about what's the feel. I'm one of these people that, you know, I take in energy. I can feel the energy that's around me. I can feel things that are coming toward me. And there can be people that I meet that I just go, whoa. You know, my partner and I don't have a relationship where I cross boundaries and say, this is what I want to do now. And this is how I'm going to do it. We're in a very monogamous relationship. Mm-hmm. We have been for 30 some years, but you know, I'll entertain any number of things to talk with him about, hey, guess where my brain went today. And this is where, in the same way that Justin Lemeller talked about, you can have all of this in your head, but that doesn't mean that you act on any of the fantasies outside. But I was trying to think of a very specific story. I think I told you this, Bridie, that here on the island, very few people on the island know who I am and what I do. There is a tiny number of people that do. And I went out to eat with them, and they're always saying, you going to write a story about this? You going to write a story about this? But actually, I'm going to tell you a different story, Bridie. We went to the theater, and in the middle of the theater, the actor had to take her top off. And in the process of doing that, the bra came with it. And we were in a three-sided arena, and everybody sitting around me is like staring at her, and everybody's like, does the other person, the other actors trying to say, put your bra came up. You're watching this whole thing play out in front of you where they're trying to take care of her. But that's not where I was looking. There was a man who was sitting like 3 feet from her on the corner side. I was watching his reaction. He was reacting totally different than everybody else. And the idea came to me of, suppose he left the room, suppose this occurred, and then we walked outside. I created this whole thing. I got home, I wrote this story, and I sent it to everybody that was at the play. And they said, wait a minute, this is what you came up with while we watched the play? And I said, yes. She said, did you leave the room? Because I think you had to leave the room to make this happen. I said, well, I think I left the room in my head, because I'm having a reaction. I'm having a response to what is actually occurring for me. I mean, you know, this is that process. And Jeremy, I think too, you know, I've been around a long time now, and you think about the differences between where I started, sexual surrogates were actually a legal thing years ago before licensure came into, and you know, I've worked with different people you know, being with groups of people with no clothes on. I mean, there's been a whole range of events. All of those things are a part of who I am. They can have, you know, little resident places, and things will come up where I go, oh, I remember what that felt like. Let me use that particular feeling, and I want to instill it in this particular situation that I'm creating with these people.
I love that. I love that story. That's so great.
It's a really cool process. It's like, what are those old, what do we used to do these a lot as kids, like the collages, like drawing from everything. Yeah. When it comes to erotic literature, because you write novels, not only stories that end up in anthologies, but complete novels of their own as well.
My first one is finished in developmental edit. I'm now revising what that has to do with. It's a series. So this is book one in the series. It's an erotic romance, and it is set in a sexuality setting. So I've created this interesting place where the hero in the story is a CEO for a pharmaceutical company, and his father, who started the company, had worked with Viagra, and they named their company Pricks. Pharmaceutical research in sex. And so that's where he is. And she is a PhD sex educator. So I'm creating a story about how these two folks get together with a history they didn't realize that they had, and you know where that goes. So I've got the whole story laid out for book one, book two, book three. And it's interesting to be able to think about using my life as part of that, that I can pull and pick and choose different pieces and say, oh, make this happen.
So when it does come down to the writing of it, how have you sort of structured that process? Because it seems to me like every writer I've ever spoken to is like, I like that I wrote something, but I don't enjoy the writing process so much.
I think because I'm a process person, I love to take things apart and put them back together. And how many different ways can you do this? So people talk about, are you a pantser or are you a plotter? So a plotter would take an outline, you know, chapter one, chapter two, here's my outline, like you were in your English class writing your theme paper. Here are the things to it. And then you write to that. Some people just sit down and start typing, and the characters will speak to me, and this is how I know they'll go, and that sort of thing. I'm a combination between the two. The idea comes to me, it comes to life. Then I sit down and start writing, and I go, okay, the front of this is where, the middle of this is where, and how do I want to see this end? And I'm in the process of writing a nonfiction book right now called Insert Sex Here, a Writer's Guide to Sexuality, because I feel like, given the world that we're thrown into, that and that we don't integrate sexuality, people say sex scenes. I don't say sex scenes. I say scenes with sex, because we don't know where somebody is in their sexual journey. We don't know who the people are that they're going to meet. And I don't want to start with a heteronormative direction. I want it to fit for the world that I've built, the direction of the people. And so it's character specific. I want to know, what family is this group of people in? In fact, I did a submission this week that is a sideline from the characters in my novel. So it can either be, this short story gets in this book, or I have a lead magnet for people, sign up for my newsletter and let me send you this extra thing that I wrote. But it's about three people who live together, two men and a woman, and she talks in her sleep. And the two men know she talks her sleep, and she gives unbelievable details, and they find out that she has a connection from her past to this big soccer guy. And they actually know the big soccer guy is going to be in town. And they created this the Sexuality Institute has a research place. So they go there. She thinks that she's going there to do this research stuff. They have all of their consents all dealt with and everything. And she's behind a one-way mirror, and the soccer guy comes in with somebody else. So I have a five-way situation going where these three are watching, they're being sexual with each other. These two on the other side are being sexual with each other. And then they all come together and go, whoa, what is this? And she thinks that the gods don't have any clue who he is in her past. And they all get to have this unfold at the same time. That's how my mind works.
You gotta write my fantasies. I think I need you, like a little bit of Neuralink here.
A fantasy coach.
Yeah, totally. 100%. I love that. My fantasies seem so vanilla right now compared to hearing that. That's so fun. I love that.
I know people say, where do you come up with this stuff? I go, I don't know. I wrote a foot fetish story and somebody said, how did you come up with that? And I said, well, I'm going to tell you. I was at this Thanksgiving event. And if you're in Florida, you know, your shoes, people don't necessarily wear shoes because it's hot. Mm-hmm. And I looked down at this man's feet and I just went, those are the most interesting feet I think I've ever seen. And I just spent time just staring at his feet. I thought, holy cow, somebody's going to go, what is wrong with you? You just keep staring at his feet. And this whole story came together that related to, it's like the nuance of each part of each little toe. I mean, I was just like, what is in your head?
I love it.
Just amazing.
Yeah, I really do love it. It's so fun. what do you, so, I mean, you know, you sort of touched on it as we've been going here, but what's in the pipeline? What's next? What are you excited for?
Well, I have several things that I'm excited for. I want to give you another resource for women. It's called an app called Rosie Wellness. OBGYN, Dr. Lindsay Harper, created this new femtech direction. And she realized that as a physician trained, you get minimal training in sexuality for women. And then she has patients come in and she has no resources for them. So she said, well, I'll make it myself. Hmm. And she is connected with unbelievable amounts of doctors. And she also has done some very specific research about women who read erotica. It increases their desire, lubrication, arousal, and orgasm. So she has a erotica component along with videos, classes, all sorts of stuff that's everything you'd ever want to know about the female body. And I work with them for their erotica, and I help put things together in that direction. And so that's one of the things that I'm doing. But Bridie, I have to tell you, I did my Twitter spaces and oh my goodness, I couldn't even believe it. It's not like doing this podcast because I just had my phone sitting here, you know, chatting. But the first one went really well and I have my second one on Wednesday. So I'm excited. It's called hashtag the sexuality space. And I'm just going to be bringing different people in and have conversations with them in a little hour setting. And I'm really looking forward to that. So a wellness journal. I have a sexuality wellness journal coming up for women. Nonfiction book on how to write sexuality for writers. The novel coming out this year. I don't know how we'll get all this done, but you know, that's what's coming down the pipe.
Yeah. Oh my gosh! All amidst a global pandemic. How about that?
That's right. You know, everybody's talked about how's your creativity been, and it's like, you know, I don't have to deal with kids. I don't have to deal with all that other stuff. I have my office right here. So it's just like get up every day. I get up, make my coffee, walk upstairs and sit down.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Well, this has been really, really fun. And I'm excited to you know, get my hands on some of your work and
to
kind of deep dive into this because it really, really sounds very fun. And I'm so, so elated that Bridie, you pulled this together. This is a really fun conversation. So thank you, Dr. J. Thanks a lot. Yes. Bridie, sorry, you were going to say something there?
Oh, just you know, is there anything we didn't cover that you think we should have our listeners hear? Or how are you feeling about
all
this?
Well, I hope everyone would feel like that they can hit the pause button and say, sexuality is good. It's good within me. It's great for me to explore it and assess. And that there are people out there who can support you in that process so that you can feel good about everything that you're doing in the rest of your life.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Dr. J. This really was fun.
Thank you.
All right, there we go. Dr. J.
Well, 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 well.
Coming at you.
That was fun.
She was fun.
She was fun. And I feel like even more inclined to visit Florida. I have a special part in place in my heart for Florida.
Florida.
I think it's really
most fucked up state on the planet. and I don't mean that pejoratively. I mean, like, you want a fucking good time or a really interesting, weird, wacky time, go to Florida. You know, it's all happening in Florida.
Have you ever done that Google?
The Florida man Google- on your birthday?
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think it's fake. I think Snopes that. There's something kind of fake to that, I think.
Totally. But what comes up?
I think mine was like a man like rides a jetpack on an alligator or something like that. I don't know. Look it up for me right now.
That's bananas. It would never be anything like that. It's got to be sort of real.
No,
Jeremy,
I mean,
oh no, it's your birthday. Real. January.
It's Florida.
No, that's Pinterest.
Pinterest.
Yeah. Ready? Florida man throws pizza at dad after finding out he helped deliver him at birth. Exciting.
Wow. Yeah, good stuff. Yeah. So anyway, Florida, great place. And even better place now that we know that Dr. J resides in the state.
Thanks.
All right. Yeah. What were you going to say there, Brian?
Thanks, baby, for another great week.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yep. This was great. And we got more great stuff in the pipeline. We can't
more
wait for
words.
You to hear it. Lots of
more
words.
More definitions.
Great
some
definitions.
Facts.
Yeah, some facts coming at you. Hard, hard-hitting facts. here's a fact of life. If you aren't following, if you aren't a patron of ours, you are not living your life to the fullest. Go to patreon.com/turnmeon, become a patron, and learn what it means to really live. if you want to support the podcast in other ways, again, like I said earlier, hit the follow button on Spotify. Leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Anything you do like that to help support the podcast and keep this little project chugging along. We know we have a lot of OG, diehard, faithful listeners, and we appreciate all of you and we love you. So keep on.
Hey, baby, is our the Human Connection Through Touch video, is that still available for purchase if people want it?
Yep.
No expiry date on that right now?
No, that just
that's okay.
Up.
That's
that
fantastic.
Just lives up there, yeah. So if you want to get a hold of that, you can check the link in Bridie's Instagram bio or the link in Termion's Instagram bio. Maybe
you can find it on my website as well, BridieMcLean.com. And that's another way you can support the podcast and check out that cool little routine, because there's going to probably be some more of that coming up in the future. It's been so highly and well received. So if you want to check out what that's about before we get another one up on the calendar, you can do it right there.
All right, folks. Thanks for tuning in. We love you. And until next week,
go touch yourself.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.